Slowly, the awareness that this was a jailbreak was beginning to sink in among the rest of the prisoners. They were reacting with a kind of catatonic ecstasy, numb and inarticulate. One prisoner wrapped his arms around the neck of the first ranger he saw and kissed him on the forehead. All he could say was, "Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy." Alvy Robbins found one prisoner muttering in a darkened corner of one of the barracks, tears coursing down his face. "I thought we'd been forgotten," the prisoner said. "No, you're not forgotten," Robbins said. "We've come for you." Abe Abraham, still clutching his bludgeon, spotted a ranger with a Tommy gun sprinting for his barracks. The ranger poked his head through the open doorway and, discerning Abraham's dim outline inside, asked, "Can you walk, Mac?"
"Yeah, I can walk," Abraham replied. "I walked out of Bataan, and by God, I can walk out of here."
Now several rangers leaped into the barracks to assist anyone who needed a hand. Abraham spied a friend of his, a civilian from Norway named Axel Svensson, lying in a heap on the floor of the barracks. Under his breath, Svensson pleaded, "Please don't hurt me. I'm Norwegian. Please help me, God." The ranger was taken aback at the thought that he'd caused such trepidation. "I'm not God," he said. "Now come on, buddy, let's go." "Please don't kill me," Svensson still didn't understand. Abraham intervened, gently taking Svensson by the arm.
"Axel, it's okay," he said. "It's Abe, your friend. It's okay."
The rangers had forgotten, or never knew in the first place, that the Kabanatuan camp held men from other nationalities. Norwegians, Canadians, Dutch, and the largest non-American contingent of all, British. A ranger cried out, "You're free! All Americans assemble at the main gate!" To which one of the proper English prisoners yelled gleefully, "I'm not American, but shall I come too?" Outside Abraham's barracks, the exodus was proceeding in a more orderly fashion. Every prisoner who could walk was emerging from his crawl space or cubbyhole and moving toward the front. Tommy Thomas and his friend the camp tailor pulled themselves up from the ditch where they'd been hiding since the shooting started. The tailor couldn't walk very well, so he jumped on Thomas's back, and they bounced awkwardly down Broadway as fast as Thomas's huge, shambling frame could go. "We moved, and we moved fast," said Thomas. "We kept our heads down and headed for the main gate." Finally, they encountered one of the rangers leading prisoners out by the arm. "Are you a Yank?" Thomas asked. And when the ranger said he was, Thomas extended his hand and said, "Put her there." "I was glad it was dark so he couldn't see my tears," Thomas recalled. "I said, 'Are we ever happy to see you?'" "Here," said the ranger, "let us carry your buddy." All of this time, the shooting had continued, first in a merciless storm, now in sporadic coughs and splutters. As the prisoners made their way to the gate, they had to pick their way through several Japanese corpses, with stray bullets pinging this way and that. On his way out, John McCarty saw a couple of Japanese guards cut down by the ranger fire. "What a sight it was watching those soldiers fall," he said. "Some of them were so near to me that I could see the puffs on the front of their uniforms." Many of the POWs had belongings they wanted to fetch. Documents, medals, souvenirs, clean uniforms they had planned to wear out of camp when and if the glorious day came. They yearned to walk out of there with dignity. All about the camp, hidden in floorboards and thatched roofs, the men had stashed their little mementos and sentimental valuables for safekeeping, hoping to drag them out on Liberation Day. But now that the hour of freedom was upon them, they had no time to retrieve their valuables. Every time a prisoner ran back to the barracks to rescue some cherished item, a ranger would have to block his path and show him the way out. Even though they had prepared themselves for the worst, the rangers were truly appalled at the grotesque condition of many of the prisoners. A nearly full moon had just risen over the Sierra Madre, flooding the countryside and making it possible for the rangers to get a vivid look at the men they were liberating. It was a ghostly parade. Amputees, consumptives, men with peg legs, men without hair or teeth, men with the elephantine appendages and scrotums indicative of wet beriberi. One ranger described them as sickly old birds that had just been plucked. The half-naked prisoners were dull-eyed and louse-infested, and they seemed old beyond their years. Most were barefoot, or they hobbled around on homemade sandals fashioned from string and slats of cardboard. Their hair was greasy and raggedly shorn close to the scalp with blunt knives. Lesions and battle scars marred their skin, and many had tropical ulcers as big as dinner plates. Some of the rangers welled with tears at the hideous procession and tried to offer comfort. "They tucked our men under their arms like babies," said Ralph Hibbs. "They shook their heads in disbelief and cried at the sight of these emaciated countrymen so far down the starvation trail."